When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. This is a hybrid edition because Ryan Latanzio, my cohort, is in Sundance. This is Ann Thompson in Los Angeles. So let's start. We're going to catch up with the most recent awards news, and then we'll get into a little Sundance stuff. This morning, as we record, the BAFTAs came out, and last Sunday, at the Critics' Choice Awards, we learned some things about who's strong and who isn't as strong as we thought. And let's just start there. Ryan, looking at the latest, what's strong, what's weak?
Emma Stone is strong now because she won the Best Actress at the Critics' Choice Awards that took place on Sunday. Over a very harried weekend, I think, for anyone involved in covering awards. And then looking this morning at the BAFTA nominations, of course, we see Emma Stone again included in the Best Actress list, but Lily Gladstone did not make it into this final group of actors, despite being on the long list. That, to me, was a major surprise. Or maybe not. I don't know. How did you feel about that, Anne?
I was just looking at this whole thing. I mean, Oppenheimer is steady as they go. I mean, they didn't miss anything, really. They had 13 nominations. Poor Things with 11, but they missed director for Yorgos Lanthimos and Mark Ruffalo, who didn't get SAG. So Mark Ruffalo is looking a little vulnerable heading into the Oscar nominations. He could still get in. You know, he's a popular guy, but he's vulnerable. The one who's really vulnerable, I think we can assume, even though Killers of the Flower Moon missed Martin Scorsese and Lily Gladstone and Leonardo DiCaprio, that we can assume that Lily and Marty will get in with the Oscars. I just don't see how that doesn't happen. But I could see Leonardo not getting in. And that's kind of amazing in a way.
Well, what do you think led to, so the lead actress category at BAFTAs is interesting because there's six of them. There's Fantasia Barrino, Sandra Hüller, Carey Mulligan, Margot Robbie, Emma Stone, and then Vivian Opera for Rye Lane, which was a movie that premiered at Sundance last year, a British film.
Great movie. I think Searchlight had it or something, or Focus, one of the two. All right. Remember with the BAFTAs that they have a sort of separate set of voters for acting categories. So that creates a certain, they're trying to make them as inclusive as possible, which is why it's so weird that they wouldn't end up not nominating Lily Gladstone, but they favor their own in the end. Finally, they favor the Brits. And someone, you know, Napoleon got a few things because it's a British movie, and Poor Things is finally a British movie. And All of Us Strangers, this is the other one that's very strange to me. You know, they give it a number of nominations and then they don't give it Andrew Scott.
And they don't put it in. I mean, it's in for outstanding British film, but it's not in the top category.
But then
film.
Andrew Haig is in there, and Paul Mescal is in there.
Yeah,
and I
don't
love
think
Paul
any
Mescal, but okay. Andrew Scott gave the performance. I think. I mean, Claire Foy got in.
Yeah, I mean, it is Andrew Scott movie, and I don't. But I really, honestly, I don't think any of these people or any of them. I think that movie is not getting any Oscar nominations.
No, it's not. I recognize that it's weak. It had to have a lot of support from BAFTA to get anywhere.
Yeah, and it's starting kind of late. I mean, I think it hasn't gone super wide. Searchlight hasn't released it very wide because I think, I mean, this is
they
my
were waiting
intuition.
For nominations.
Right, which aren't happening now.
Which and is so what they did like, with Poor Things as well.
Correct, yeah. Correct.
Now, Poor Things is like in 700 theaters or something, but they're going to go really wide when the nominations hit. But All of Us Strangers is still in limited, very limited release. Yeah, something went wrong with that one. It just didn't have the support that it
I mean,
needed.
you know my feelings about that movie, but
I
we
know
don't
you're
need to
not
rehash
unhappy.
them. No, I'm not. I don't. I am feeling fine.
All right. So what do you learn from the BAFTA nominations? You learn that where the support is on the European side of the equation, basically. It's like the British voters overlap with the Oscar voters to a certain degree, and then they represent in a way what the European vote might be, the international vote. And so you can see where the strength is, their strength for Anatomy of a Fall. But the movie, that did very, very well. But the and you've been saying, you've been hoping that Anatomy of a Fall would do well at the Oscars, and it probably will. But the question there, Society of the Snow did not suddenly appear like last year's All Quiet on the Western Front. It just got a normal foreign language nomination. So it's not like it's a big factor because of the BAFTAs.
You know, it's interesting about this category, not obviously not featured here as a film, not in the English language. You know, something that I heard over the weekend is that people voting for international feature film at the Oscars, or I'm sorry, for the final nominations, there is a movement of people intentionally not putting down Taste of Things because they take umbrage over Anatomy of a Fall not being the selection. And so now I'm thinking it's very possible that Taste of Things is vulnerable and I think possible to not get into the final five.
It's
I just
still
think
pretty
this.
popular, Ryan. It, it's a, it's
Sure,
a, it's a
sure.
pretty popular movie.
But there's a lot of really popular
You're
movies
in New
in
York.
that
Remember that you're
category.
in New York.
Right.
New York isn't necessarily representative of
We
the.
know things in New York.
Is not the same as LA. It isn't. It isn't. And you guys are a little more brainiac than the mainstream Angelina voters.
That's
Let's
why I live
that
there.
way.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
I align with the brainiacs.
So basically what's going on? You've arrived in Sundance, right?
Yes.
You are give us a little sense of the place and what's on your agenda.
Yeah. So I got here yesterday because the festival really kicks off in earnest within the next couple of hours where screenings start throughout Park City. Normally, we have until the evening where for screenings to begin, but this year things are starting earlier. There's a big opening night gala honoring the likes of Christopher Nolan. Kristen Stewart has a couple of movies at the festival, and then that's up against a ton of other screenings. I'm going to the world premiere of Freaky Tales, and then that'll be my first taste this year of scrambling to get back to the condo and to punch out a review because that is one of the higher profile titles. You know, Eugene Hernandez mentioned to us last week that that's one that he expects will be some a good deal of buying
Action.
heat behind action behind this one. Exactly. Yeah. And then IndieWire, we have our studio where we're having 40 plus films and their filmmakers come through over the weekend to spend a few minutes with us to talk about their releases and so forth. So
Which ones are
we're
you
all
going to do?
I'm
Oh, by
doing
the
inter
way, I have to tell you that at the Critics' Choice Awards on Sunday, I was sitting at the Oppenheimer table, and so that was cool. It was Emily Blunt and her husband John Krasinski, and they're all very good friends with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, and Cillian Murphy was there. And then on the other side was Alden Ehrenreich, who went out of his way to say that his interview at Sundance last year for Fair Play was the smartest interview anyone gave him.
I did moderate that panel, so that's great to hear. I did sense from him that he had a not terrible time because, you know, you see it. I mean, it's like they do this rigmarole here of like the Deadline Studio, the Rap Studio, the Variety Studio, THR, and then they get to us. And then in between all that, they have to do photos and everything. And so we're not always the last
And they
stop, but
get
I
to
mean,
visit all
it's.
the swag lounges. Don't feel
Yeah,
sorry for them.
exactly. No, but they're ponied around and being asked the same questions over and over, and so you have to try and give some variety, and especially someone like Alden Ehrenreich, who last year I'm sure everybody asked him. I think I probably even did too, out of obligation. Is will you play Han Solo again. And so, you know, I think the word on the street this year is that some talent are, they're wary about having to go through everything that's going on in the news. Or, you know, it's like when you think about Jodie Foster saying that thing about Gen Z a couple of weeks ago, that now she's launching True Detective, which we'll talk about later. But it's like, this is a thing she's going to have to keep answering to, is that she said working with Gen Z was kind of like, was kind of underwhelming.
She's so right.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I'm not Gen Z, so I could say that. But the funny thing was, but she was like, you know, oh, you've made a lot of grammatical errors in this. And they'll say, well, isn't that kind of limiting? And I found that hilarious because I have had that experience. Well, as far as what I'm doing for the studio, one of them, I can't talk about my feelings for any of these movies yet because the embargoes haven't lifted, but one of them is the Neon documentary Seeking Mavis Beacon, which I think is going to be a buzzy movie here. Rory Kennedy has a cult docuseries called The Synanon Fix. I actually have to watch that still. They just got me the screener, so I'll be talking to her on Sunday. But Anne, I know that both of us, we've already seen a few movies that by the time the podcast goes live, embargoes will have lifted. So I'm sure there's a few that we can talk about now.
So yeah. I saw two movies. One is Frida, which is the documentary. I mean, I've seen a few films, but two I can talk about. Frida is the documentary from Carla Gutierrez, who's an editor turned documentary filmmaker. She's Peruvian, and she's fascinated by this Mexican artist. And the movie is very much made in Spanish. And she had the ability, partly because of that, to really find all this amazing archive stuff. And so it just gets translated. And she made the decision, which I think a lot of people will debate, to animate Frida's art, to sort of liven things up in the movie. And it's a little creepy, you know, when Frida's heart starts bleeding and dripping on her dress and stuff like that.
This is an Amazon MGM documentary, and you know, and it's all told in her words.
Imagine.
And it's all told in Frida's own words. So a lot of us, if our familiarity with her is the Julie Taymor movie, like, you're going to see a different side of her here. I have to say, regarding the animation, I found it extremely creepy, almost defacing in a way.
I felt violated by it. I felt it violated the art, the sanctity of the art.
I agree. And I can't speak for Frida Kahlo, but I feel like she sure as shit would not want her paintings to be animated in this way, especially at the final image, the deer that has all of the arrows in its side, like the arrows are disappearing, and the deer gallops away to like show Frida kind of rise, like her spirit sort of rising from the ashes. I found this very strange and manipulative.
Yeah. I'm afraid I agree with you. And then the other one I saw was Thelma, which is delightful. A movie about an older woman in her 90s, played by the extraordinary June Squibb, who you may remember from Nebraska. And this movie is very similar to Nebraska. It's basically the same idea, that a woman of a certain age is capable of moving and grooving and pursuing and doing what she has to do. She's basically chasing down money that was taken from her over the phone in a scam, and she's not going to have it. It's quite delightful.
Is this an awards picture, Anne?
I don't think so. I think it's a good solid mainstream crowd pleaser.
I do plan to see it. I think I'll watch it virtually when I get back home, because, you know, starting the 25th through the 28th, a lot of these movies we can see at home. We've talked about this. This one, it just sounds very Sundance-y to me. Do you know what I mean? And like the fact that it's on a road trip, I'm curious about it.
It's not breaking any new ground as far as movie making is concerned. It's just one of those movies that's, you know, puts one foot ahead of the other in a perfectly direct and delightful way.
One that
thanks to this actress, basically.
And this movie is looking for acquisition. This is a sales title.
And what have you seen?
Well, there's one that I can speak to that's premiering on Thursday today, this afternoon. And then by the time the podcast goes up, embargo will be lifted. I saw it a couple weeks ago back in New York. And my estimation of it has kind of only grown since. And Neon also has this movie. This is one of the three they're bringing here, along with Handling the Undead and Seeking Mavis Beacon. This is called Stress Positions. It's a first-time feature directed by Theda Hamel, who's a trans filmmaker who also stars in the movie, which is about a gaggle of very stressed out people, New Yorkers in June 2020. You can imagine this is not a time that we all want to go back and relive.
No.
No, and I was living, we were in LA at that time. I moved to New York a few months later, but you know, this was the days of the banging of the pots and pans in support of the healthcare workers, just a general atmosphere of paranoia that's similar to more, it was equally as contagious as the
Washing
virus.
your groceries.
You watch it, yep, Lysoling everything everything that's coming in your path. And John Early plays someone who's going through a divorce. And this comedian, John Early, who recently had an HBO special, he works a lot with Kate Berlant. He's a really funny gay comedian. And he is caring for and nursing his nephew, who is a Moroccan boy, who is very badly injured and convalescing in bed. And it is about all of these people's sort of prejudices and biases and anxieties that sort of collide over the course of a few days in New York. And Sundance movies really tend to be about like identity and coming of age and sort of in these pressure cooker bottleneck scenarios. I do see this as a trend a lot over the years, but I do think that this movie is kind of interrogating almost what a Sundance movie looks like. I think it's really funny and really sharply drawn. And I don't know when Neon's releasing it, but it'll be, you know, later this year, I
All right,
assume.
I'll check that one out. I get to do the portal. I mean, some people are sending me links, which is great, but I get to do the portal too next week. And then we have the nominations on October the 23rd. October, listen to me. And then we have the nominations on January
Yeah, please
23rd.
God, not October. No, like
Oh, you're
this
still
needs to
there.
end.
It'll never end. That's right. Oh, by the way, it's interesting. The CCAs actually did do well. They increased their viewership as the Globes did. The Globes did really well. They got a lot of people to watch, but partly because they were the first big show. I'm quite convinced that's why. And then the other,
The
there
Emmys were
was some,
depressingly low ratings,
and then the Emmys were really
like
bad. But
4
that's
million or
also
something.
completely predictable. It was the
Of
last of
course.
all these awards. All these people had won twice already or three times in the previous week.
Yeah, we're casting season 3 of White Lotus, but we're still talking about awarding season 2 of White Lotus. That was a painful
And
evening,
the bear
I
people
gotta
went
say.
up, and the beef people
Yes.
went up, and
Like we've done all of this before.
It's been done. So it was not a bad show per se. I mean, it was certainly better than the Globes was as a show, but nobody needed to see it. It was old news at this point. But they can come back. They can come back in the normal course of. They had been delayed by the strikes. That's all. That everything got crammed into this hideous week as a result of the strikes. The other thing that's going on is there's new TV. Thank you very much. We watched True Detective. And I have to say, I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I loved being in this frozen wasteland in the dark of night. And I love Jodie Foster in a role like this. She's basically playing the Kate Winslet role from Mara of Easttown in the, and I don't mind. I don't mind that it's derivative of that.
Yeah, she's a cantankerous cop in the way that Kate Winslet was. She hates the Beatles, not a Beatles fan. And putting us, it's set in Alaska, putting us in this dark, wintry world, in the first, in sort of the cold open, if you will, of the show, there's a severed tongue on the ground. Of course, you think of John Carpenter, The Thing. I don't think this is going to be a body horror
This has
story, but
similar aspects to that.
absolutely, and as
Because this
well
whole
as
group, this whole lab of guys who've been holed up in this place has disappeared, and we discover them at the end of the first episode, frozen in the ice.
and there you know from the first season of the X-Files, there's also a very similar episode kind of inspired by The Thing, where it's sort of this bottle episode of just people in a research facility in the Arctic. And there is something very X-Files-esque about this season so far, because
Because it has a
these sort
horror
of,
element.
yeah, and these apparitions, if you will, the Fiona Shaw seeing this man with no shoes on standing in the snow, it does, I mean, it's putting us in a supernatural mode, as much as I understand from reading reviews of the whole season overall that some of these supernatural episodes are a bit of a red herring. I don't know what that's going to mean, but I'm excited. And also really, I'm really excited for the actor who's her Jodie Foster's sparring partner in this, who is Callie Reese, who got
she's
some
fantastic.
Indie. Yeah, she's great. And she got some indie awards attention a few years ago for a movie called Catch the Fair One, which is about a boxer who's embroiled in a sort of human trafficking network.
Well,
scandal.
One of the things they do in this episode, which is what you want, is they establish that character really well. They immediately set her up as extraordinarily powerful and capable and ruthless, basically. And also, you know, anti-male violence, which is clear. You know,
and you know, there's a sex scene where she's on top and she's really going at
top.
It, and so that is character building as well.
She's controlling it.
yeah, exactly. You know, there's something funny. I forget how this was flagged to me. Nick Pizzolatto, who was behind the previous three seasons of True Detective, the one with Matthew McConaughey, then Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn and all those, and then Mahershala Ali. His Instagram bio, it still says True Detective, but then in parentheses, not in all caps, Night Country. There's a little bitterness there, I'm sure.
There's a new showrunner in town, and that's
show.
Okay.
And it's definitely flipping the script, if you will, on what has otherwise been
a very male show.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, have fun in Sundance. There's a part of me that wishes I was there and another part of me that is delighted that I am not.
Same in some ways for myself. You know, I'm very happy to be here, but it's going to be a long week ahead and a lot of burning the candle at both ends and just have to show myself grace, as they say.
The two parties I'm sorry to miss are HBO and Synetic, although I always end up waiting in line in the cold for Synetic.
Well, apparently the Synetic party, they've already invited over 1,000 people and have been told to stop. So, and this is a one where last year, I think I waited, and everyone goes to this one, even in the line to get in through security to get on my flight. People are going to the Synetic party? I ran into someone I know from Synetic. I was like, I didn't get invited. And she's like, neither did I. I can't tell you anything about it. I waited like an hour and a half last year.
No, and you do it. You actually do wait, even though you tell yourself it's not worth it, because it is worth it.
Yes.
It is worth it.
I will be at that one. And then the night before we have our chili party. So.
Oh, good.
That'll in a bigger space this year. Yeah. At the shop. It's a yoga studio, I believe. So excited about that.
Sorry to miss that. All right. Bye-bye, Ryan. Have
fun.
Bye,
Anne. Thanks.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.